Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Think harder. Harder. Think better. Better. Think Blair. Blair. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We earned this the hard way. It wasn't a whole lot of fun this year, but our guys and our coaching staff and our management staff did a lot of really good things here in Toronto, but this will certainly help.
That's Brendan Shanahan, Grand Poobah of the Toronto Maple Leafs, celebrating the team's win. The draft lottery.
That's saying something. They got a lot of poobahs. So to be the grand poobah in that
grand
group.
Poobah, yeah. You've got to have a lot of poo in your bah.
Exactly.
You're the grand poobah. Your Toronto Maple Leafs now hold the first pick overall in the NHL draft, which they will use to acquire Austin Matthews. And, there was an interesting question asked of Brendan Shanahan after the pick. And it's kind of been out there. A couple of people have written about it. Damian Cox has written about it. Other people have talked about it. But, you know, we've been operating under this assumption that there's this, whatever, five-year plan or however long it is. But what if, in addition to getting Austin Matthews, with all those draft picks you have, what if you go after an RFA, a restricted free agent? Well, you know, maybe you get Steven Stamkos. But if you don't get Steven Stamkos, what if you go after an RFA? Maybe kind of prime the pump a bit. Because I can tell you what, I would guarantee you that ownership wouldn't be upset if that five-year plan turned into three.
The ownership, the guys here, who are also part of ownership.
They'd be very happy.
There'd be a number of people who would be quite thrilled if this thing accelerated a bit, yes.
Glenn Healy of the NHL and Sportsnet in Hockey Night in Canada joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So what do you think, Glenn? Oh, he's not on yet. Okay. I just assumed Glenn was here because Glenn's always on. So that's what I would do if I was Elise. I mean, take a run Stamkos and but also take a look at an RFA and use those draft picks to be able to get an RFA. I mean, to me, that would be I understand that these guys want to take it slowly, deliberately. I understand that there's a plan in place. But I think we've also started, to hear this a little bit at the end of the offseason on Primetime Sports, where Brendan Shanahan made the point about, you know, yeah, we're prepared to look at things. I mean, it's not cast in stone that, you know, well, we don't want to win in the third year of this rebuild. We want to wait until 5 years.
Well, you need layers, too, to be a successful team. You need generational layers,
yes.
Right? You can't win with a bunch of 24-year-olds. If everybody's 24, you're not going to win. You know, you need some – and there are going to be some holdovers from the group that's there now. I think Morgan Riley probably around. Looks like Nazem Kadri's going to be around. So you are going to have some, you know, elder statesmen. It's hard to believe that those guys will be elder statesmen, but they will be as this rebuild goes on. But I think you're right. You know, you add some texture and you add some experience. How are you going to do it? You know, you can't – it's great to be young and build up from the foundations, but you can't be completely young.
Well, and, you know, just take a look at the Edmonton Oilers as a perfect example.
Yes.
I mean, you've got to – I mean, one of the things Alex Anthopoulos made often as a point is, you know, he talked about wanting an assembly line of guys coming up from the minor leagues. And what he meant was somebody that will – I want the team set up so that by the time – we need to make hard economic decisions on a guy because not everybody you develop is going to be a star. A lot of guys you develop, quite frankly, are going to get to the point where you may be overpaying them for what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to have is a system in place that allows you to make that slightly difficult decision on a guy knowing you have somebody else in the organization who can replace him cheaply. There's no point in making that hard decision on a guy and then turning around and saying, okay, now we got to go and sign a guy to replace him. You want to have kind of that assembly line. So it's a matter of managing your window of opportunity as much as anything. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL and Sportsnet now joins us in the Jeff Blair Show. Hello, Glenn.
I'm doing pretty well.
Big day in Toronto Saturday.
Oh, you think?
Big day. I didn't want to begin. Well, first of all, I think the big winners, probably the Winnipeg Jets, I guess, more than any other team, the Winnipeg Jets were the big winners. But with this first pick, you know, if do you think that there is a chance that with this first pick in hand and with the other draft picks they have, Glenn, that maybe Brendan Shanahan might look to speed things up a little bit, maybe in addition to drafting Austin Matthews, go after an RFA, you know, try to, I think, at least you're going to have the conversation with Steven Stamkos, but maybe even do more than that to maybe speed this up a bit.
Well, it's not a cask of scotch. You don't wait 21 years and then you open it.
Mm-hmm.
You decide how you're going to improve your team based on three different ways, which is through the draft, and they're going to really do that come this draft in lots of ways. Through the next three drafts, they're really going to do it in a big way. Second way you can improve your team is through trades, and they're going to improve their team anytime someone calls and says, we've got cap issues, would you like this player? And you've got draft picks and players that you can send back the other way to improve your club, or free agency. And they certainly have cap space. If anything, clearing the deck chairs and getting rid of a Kessel and getting rid of a Phaneuf and a Clarkson, that's just absolute pure magic for them. And so they have nothing but cap space, nothing but draft picks, and the ability to listen, and the first overall pick. So I'd say they're in a pretty good place.
Looking into your crystal ball, what come October, which is not that far off, when they open the season, what's the Maple Leaf? What are they going to look like, Glenn? Like how you know, we're going to obviously, yes, they have, there's going to be good things happening in the draft, and we know about the young talent, so much of which is playing with the Marlies right now. But when they actually put a team on the ice to start the season, you know, and given the kind of, yeah, the, you know, they're kind of clinging to the virtue of patience here in a lot of ways with these young players. What's that? Is it going to be kind of a hybrid team next year, or are we going to start to see the foundation of the next, you know, what they hope is going to be the good team here?
No, it's the foundation. I don't think that they go out and grab a bunch of retreads that are going to take a young guy's spot and take a place of a guy who's going to, you know, in 2 years be a way better player and have more responsibility. Young players, they don't come into this league and immediately it's plug and play unless they're absolute stars like a Connor McDavid. So it's going to take some time to bring these players along to learn how it is to play in a man's game. Like, what will Mitch Marner look like? I don't know. I haven't seen him play against men. I've seen him play against 16-year-old boys. Put him on the ice with a 32-year-old who weighs 230 pounds. That's a much different animal. So we have to see how these guys react to the pro game. It's going to take time for some of them, less for others. But one thing is for sure, the road that they're going to drive on, the management group knows exactly what that road is. And the second part about getting a player after you've drafted him is you have to develop him. And I think with Babcock, you've got a really good guy who knows how to develop players into becoming pros. He has taken veterans from the team last year and made them into pros. But the road to building the team is no longer through a Joffrey Leupel or a Stefan Robida or any of the players who have put on the sweater and played for a couple hundred games. That ship has sailed.
But that team, if that's the way they go, and I think you're probably right, that team could finish dead last next year, correct?
Sure, there could be more pain.
Yeah.
I mean, that they're not going to deviate from what they consider to be the road just based on the fact they won a lottery. The lottery gets them a good player. Great, now you got one. We got to add more to that mix. And they're not going to deviate from that road if they don't get a Steven Stamkos in free agency. And they certainly won't deviate from that if they have all these picks and they decide they want to put some of them together and make some trades and their dance partners don't want to dance with them. You have to continue down the road of, you know, draft, develop, and start building this team, not for 1 year or 2 years, but for 10 years to be competitive.
And Glenn, there's no doubt that Austin Matthews is the first pick, is there?
No.
Okay. Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the past couple of weeks. It almost seemed as if people were preparing Leafs fans for not having the first pick overall. And
some bets were being hedged.
You know,
yeah.
Start. Boy, I'll tell you, Patrick Laine, he'd look good here as well.
How many of the guys who wrote that crap, how many of them saw him live?
Mm.
So stop it. You know, you're making projections on players. You've never been to a junior game or you've never been over to see what he can do in a league that is better than anything in the Canadian Hockey League. So that's where it gets crazy, because you're writing stuff about players you've actually never even seen. So talk to the scouts, talk to every single scout that has watched him, and there isn't one that will deviate from him being number one.
All right, shifting focus to the Stanley Cup playoffs. San Jose leading 2-0 after a 3-2 win over Nashville. Is this a different Sharks team than the one we're used to seeing? There seems to be a little more there, isn't there?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's who you get to play too, isn't it? Like, they just seem to match up pretty well against their opponent and seem to be handling them pretty well. And you know, when you look at the three Central Division teams that are still available and still there playing, I mean, there's some really good storylines, because you know, for so many years they've got no credit and have, you know, failed miserably come the postseason. This year just seems different. It seemed like a different group. I mean, they're certainly uglier with all the beards, that's for sure. And then, you know, you combine that with a St. Louis team that never gets any respect, and you're going to fire Hitchcock, and the next thing you know, they could be a team that's through, and Dallas, and it's going to be a good Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, it's going to have a different look, too, which is, you know, again, part of it is just that it's going to be, it's not going to be the Kings, and it's not going to be the Hawks, so you know, whoever ends up in there is a good story, I think.
Totally.
Were you any surprised at all about the Orpik suspension?
No. No, because you check all the different barometers off. Okay, first off, it was late, so that's a factor. Second, he didn't have the puck. Okay, that's a factor. Third, you hit him directly to the head. That's a factor. You picked his head. That's another factor. You kind of lifted your elbow to pick his head, to hit him in the head when it was late. There's the biggest factor, and the player is injured. He's concussed. So I don't know what other boxes you're going to mark off. To give him a suspension. He's pretty much hit them all. It's a full buffet of suspendable items. Pick one of them, and you could give him a game for each one.
The Caps and Penguins will play tonight, game three of their series, tied 1-1 at 8 o'clock on CBC. You kind of get the impression you might as well settle in for a long series with those two, don't you?
Yeah, I would think that the Capitals have kind of woken up to the fact that this Pittsburgh team is not the same stale team that was around a couple years ago. They've got a new coach who comes in. He brings in a bunch of the players from Wilkes-Barre that he played or coached that have tremendous amount of speed. They make some pretty good trades come through the year. They're a team that, for my liking, for six periods of hockey or more because of the overtime, they have been the better team. And so Washington had best get their game going, because as a President's Trophy team, they've now lost home ice. And, you know, when you go 15 minutes without a shot like they did last game, that's probably not the way you want to play at home on a Saturday night.
You know, stale, that's a really interesting idea, Glenn, because, you know, you're right. The Penguins have been a very good hockey team since, you know, not long after Sidney Crosby unpacked his bags. They probably underachieved. They have underachieved in terms of Stanley Cups. You know, obviously there are other issues in terms of roster and cap and all that stuff that affect teams. But a staleness had kind of crept in there. And again, in a way that it didn't seem to creep in with Chicago, you know, they seemed to manage to renew themselves with, you know, a slightly shifting cast. So do you think the coaching change is the biggest part of that, or is there something else that happened in Pittsburgh?
No, I would agree with that, because the coach coached those players in the minors, had faith in them. They came up. They know his coach speak. He has faith in them to the point where you don't bring a player up like a Sheary and put him on the fourth line and say, well, you didn't do anything. No, you're a speedy guy who's got some offensive instincts. I'll put you with Sidney Crosby. That's a pretty intimidating thing to play with a guy like Crosby, but the kid managed to do it and managed to have the faith of the coach where it's not going to be one shift and done. We're going to keep you. Trust me on this. You trust me, I'll trust you, and I'll keep playing you in that spot. And so, yeah, the coach would be the start. You know, Mike Johnson, if anyone predicted that, I'd be shocked, where he was picked to coach that team, and he came into an animal that just he wasn't ready for it. So you change the coach, he changes the personnel, and then you make some, again, you can make some trades, and they did that. Trevor Daley comes in, he makes a big impact on their team. And there have been a number of guys, Carl Hagelin, I mean, they want speed. You can't get a faster guy. And they make a trade with Anaheim, and it works out perfectly for their hockey club. So it's a way different team than it was at the beginning of the year when Crosby went the first four games without a point. And just to show that, When you look at the last game, a one-goal game, 2 minutes left to go in the game, Malkin did not have a single shift, and yet he was the most dominant player in the game. They were relying on Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin and a whole group of different players.
You know, one of the Penguins storylines that I find really interesting, too, is just Chris Letang. I mean, logging all the minutes that he's logging. You know, this is a guy, a couple of years ago, people weren't wondering about him, but a couple of years ago there was, I think, maybe a thought that maybe he wasn't quite the elite player he once had been. He had the concussion and a couple of other injuries. But, my God, he's been a force out there for them, an absolute force all year, but in carrying it into the playoffs.
Yeah, and there's another example of a coach who just taps him on the back as many times as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm standing beside Jacques Martin. And the question isn't, okay, you're out. It's like, you okay? Okay, go. As long as you're okay, you keep going.
Yeah.
And to play the number of minutes that he does with the intensity that he has, he's got a combination of everything. He's fast, he's skilled, he jumps up in the rush, he's physical, competitive. He's a complete player. And, you know, it was a couple years ago he was nominated for the Norris,
yep.
2013. And you see why, and you could argue that he's one of the best defensemen in the game now.
It sounds like you like the Penguins in the series, don't you, Glenn? It sounds like you like the Penguins in the East in general.
Well, if Washington decides that the games don't start at 8:25, yeah, I like the Penguins. But
yeah,
they've got to get things on their mark here. Ovechkin, to me, has not been a factor at all in the series through six periods plus. They've found a way to get to the goaltender, which is something no other team could do through the course of the regular season. Justin Williams, to me, looks like it could be tired and over for him. He doesn't look fast like he did where he's Mr. Game 7. They're not going to get to Game 7 for him to be Mr. Game 7. So if it continues down this road, then the Penguins are the better team to win the series. Washington shows why they won the President's Trophy and didn't lose two games in a row all season long through the regular season. Then Washington's the team that should handle this series. But the way it goes now, through six-plus periods, Pittsburgh's the better team. Momentum can change in one period of hockey.
Hey Glenn, what explains Alexander Ovechkin's lack of production? Because this is through the regular season, too. I mean, I don't know if he had a point in the regular season meetings between these teams. Is there a matchup? What explains this?
Well, you've got to give the Washington Capitals some credit here, too, as well. You've got Niskanen and Alzener, who are on the ice together for most of half of the game and most of all of Crosby's shifts. And that defensive pair is a pretty good defensive pair. And then the next group that you send out is pretty good as well. Carlson's a guy we talked about potentially winning the Norris early in the year, and Orpik is a pretty solid defender. He's gone now for a couple, mm-hmm. so that takes him out of most of this series. But their top four can really defend. And then if you get through that top four and you think, okay, we got a chance, well, the guy who's going to win the Vezina is standing behind you going, okay, come to me.
I phrased my question improperly. I was talking about Ovechkin. I mentioned Crosby, then I went to Ovechkin because Ovechkin hasn't got, I don't think, any points against him this year, or certainly hasn't been a factor against him in the regular season. And now, is that a matchup thing?
No, that's just you got to execute. I mean, mm-hmm. shoot the puck at the net, you hit the net.
Right.
If the shot's not there and there are people blocking your way to the net, you got to find a way to make a difference. He's had some clear shots, particularly on the power play. And he's missed the net by 3 feet, 4 feet. But that's, you know, you don't have to put it through the net. Just put it past that little red line. We saw that with TJ Oshie.
Yep. Heels, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this.
All right. Enjoy the game tonight, boys.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. And again, game 3 of the Caps and Penguins series. That series tied at one game apiece. Goes tonight at 8 o'clock on CBC. All games are available on Rogers NHL Game Center Live. Tuesday, the Lightning and Islanders, that'll be at 7 p.m. on CBC. Sharks and Preds, Game 3 of that series will be at 9 p.m. on Sportsnet 360, and of course Sportsnet Now. Stars and Blues will play Game 3 of their series at 9:30 on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet Now. You know I haven't heard from for a while?
Oh no, not another Dangle Dial. The Dangle Dial is brought to you by Panago Pizza.
I knew he was going to call in today. I just knew this.
Like, Jeff, buddy. Oh, everyone was telling me to call in.
Like,
they said that you missed me, man.
ESP Brunt,
what a
you know,
good
the guy's
time to call in, right?
Yeah.
Everything seems to be going right.
I mean, just look at the past, like, 48 hours.
Oh,
Austin Matthews. Well, okay, we don't know that it's going to be Austin Matthews. It might be the Finnish kid that lies on the floor. But the Leafs won the first overall pick in the draft lottery. The next day, Game 7, Raptors Pacers. The Raptors win Game 7. They
Dangle
get the
expanding
first
his horizon.
Series
yeah,
win
I'm impressed.
Since 2001.
I'm
the
impressed.
Leafs get the first overall pick. Since 1985, that was Wendell Clark for all you kids playing at home. Jeff, what grade were you in back then? And to top it all off, the Blue Jays have won 20 straight games. Okay, maybe not. Okay, you can't have it all, but whatever. Raptors, Leafs, which one are you more excited for, Jeff?
The Dangle Dolls brought to you by Panago Pizza. Something for everyone. You can check out the Steve Dangle blog at sportsnet.ca for Steve's videos and podcasts, including his live reaction to the lottery win. Well, it can't be live because that happened Saturday. Oh, I see. It's a tape. Okay, his live reaction to the lottery win, which features him running around the CBC building, and his post-lottery reaction, which starts with him screaming in joy. We got to go see that right now.
I think we've got better. We got a break coming up. We can check that.
We got to go see that right now. There's no doubt about it.
I think they frown on running around the CBC building screaming. I think.
Well, I think so. Yeah. Although there, goodness knows now there's enough room to run around there.
There is some space
without running into anybody. By the way, your Toronto Raptors are heading to round two of the 2016 NBA playoffs. You just heard Mr. Dangle talk about that. And we at Sportsnet 590 The Fan want to send you on a road trip to Game 4 next Monday night. One lucky winner will get to fly in style with Air Canada and enjoy a one-night stay in Miami to cheer on your Raptors. Lucky you, it's Miami, not Charlotte. Enter, that's me, that's not the contest.
And it's Miami, not Indianapolis.
And
it's
not
getting
better.
That's
true. Enter online in the fan club for your chance to win and then tune to hear if you're a qualifier. Then on Friday, the Andrew Walker Show will announce the grand prize winner. It's the Northside Pride Contest presented by Air Canada. For full contest rules and details, head to sportsnet.ca/590. If you go to Miami, you may not even make the game.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. There are other things to do there.
I just go to South Beach.
Yeah.
Find a bar someplace. Watch the game. But anyhow, there you go. So go to the fan club and enter for your chance to win. Andrew Walker will announce the grand prize winner on a show on Friday. Again, the Northside Pride Contest presented by Air Canada. And for full contest rules and details, head to sportsnet.ca/590. We're not eligible for this, are we? I don't know.
Nor
why
Nor is
they
anyone
do that.
You're related to or you have met or
I don't know why they do that.
Anything like that.
We'll have baseball tonight. Boy, will we have baseball tonight. The Texas Rangers in town to face the Blue Jays. The Rangers 14-11, the Jays 12-14 after that win over Tampa. The first time these teams have met since Joey Bautista did the bat flip. So I'm going to spend all night waiting for retribution. It's not going to happen.
Nah.
Anyhow, first pitch is just after 7 on Sportsnet 590 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Buck Martinez will have the call of the game on Sportsnet. And guess what? Buck Martinez is going to join us when the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt continues on the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Tulowitzki hits one deep to left center field. Up it goes. Let's admire this one. And there she goes. A three-run home run for Troy Tulowitzki. His fifth, and the Blue Jays have broken it up here. Now leading 5-1. A four-run ninth inning.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. The Blue Jays and Rangers will play tonight at the Rogers Center. First time the Rangers have been back in town since Game 5 of the ALDS. I'm just kidding about the bean brawl. Brunt, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen, I'm telling you.
Nothing's going to happen, is there?
When you most expect it, it doesn't happen. It may something down the road later in the season. No one's
in Texas.
Sleepy day in August in Texas when it's 105 degrees. That's when something's
and everybody's
happen.
Mad to be there to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, you are right. So often we talk about this and it never happens. And I think I know what Buck Martinez's answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. Buck Martinez, our play-by-play voice in Sportsnet, will have the call of the game along with Dan Shulman tonight, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Nothing's going to happen, is it?
Good morning. I don't think so. I think the people are more concerned about playing baseball right now. Mm. That's a long time in the past. And, you know, Blue Jays have more concerns than worrying about Texas than last year, I think.
Yeah, no, you may be right about that, Buck. Now, they win. Okay, the glass half full. They win 2 of 3 in Tampa, a place they've had trouble winning games. The starting pitching is terrific, by and large, has been great. But they hit some home runs. They didn't hit anything else, but they hit some home runs. Let's talk about the offense first. It was seeing Troy Tulowitzki turn on a fastball, an elevated fastball, and knock it out of the park. Might have been the best swing I've seen from him this season. Is there reason to get your hopes up about Tulowitzki at this stage, Buck? Or, you know, I've been puzzled by the guy since he came to Toronto in terms of his offense. Defensively, he's what he is. He's great. But he's never looked like the player I thought he was going to be offensively.
Yeah, no, I think there are some encouraging signs, Stephen. And I think the fact that he hit that fastball, you know, he has been kind of carving underneath the ball a little bit. And I think if he gets back on top, he's always been good at tomahawking that high fastball and getting on top of it, hammering it out of the ballpark. But I think he missed a couple of home runs prior to hitting that big home run on Sunday. So I think he's getting close. I know we've been talking about that for a month now. But I truly believe that he understands now where the problem lies, and it's the fact that he's probably worried a little bit too much about his average as opposed to worrying about getting on that fastball and doing what he's done so well in his career.
Do you have a theory, Buck? This one of the things that's been a bit of a puzzle about this team starting this season is that they have not been a good fastball hitting team. You know, their teams have been getting even the big guys out with the fastball, aside from Donaldson, and they also haven't hit left-handed pitching very well, and they killed left-handed pitching last year. What do you think is cooking there?
I think they're both rooted in the same thought process, and that is everybody knows we're a good fastball hitting team, so let's try to hit the breaking ball. I think what they need to do is get back to what they do best, and that's hitting the fastball. I think even Jose Bautista has had some fastballs to hit. He's been a little bit late on them. And you'll remember when he turned his career around, the key to his success was getting his foot down, getting ready, and anticipating hitting the fastball. If you're going to get enough fastballs to hit during a particular at-bat, don't worry about the other stuff and take care of what you do best. And I think that's kind of a team thing. I think even Edwin's gone through it a little bit, where they're just worried about, well, they know we hit fastballs, so let's try to hit the other pitches. Well, I think they should get back to doing what they do best, and that's jumping on the fastball.
I know that you and Pat both talked a lot ad nauseum on the weekend about Russ Martin and you know just how painful it is to watch him swing the bat with those neck spasms. It sounds as if the Jays are going to keep playing him, that he's not going to go in the DL, and you know clearly they need his defense. But Buck, you know, how concerned would you be that even though it is only April, even though it's only 1 month, and Russ has had bad Aprils before, this is certainly not, well, not to this degree, but he's had some pretty bad Aprils. How concerned would you be that this is, you know, that he's risking something long-term here to his health I'm talking about?
Jeff, this is where you have to really trust the player. And Russell has enough experience and enough common sense to be honest with the training staff and the coaching staff to tell him if he's got some significant concerns about his neck problem. But I don't think he does. You know, Russell's a very competitive guy and a very proud guy, and he hates what he's going through right now. I started to see some frustration during batting practice in Tampa Bay. But I think he's going to be all right. I know one thing he's done. He's shaved his beard off. He's ready to start fresh in this month of May. But, you know, he has missed a lot of pitches. He got a base hit to right field in the Tampa Bay series. But I think more than anything, once you know that, you know, you're not going to further – damage yourself by playing, you get back in and you grind through it. He's an everyday player. He's going to play every day. He's going to work his way through this thing. And the only way you can get out of it is by playing. As long as you're not hurt and, you know, not playing would help you get healthy, I think he's going to play. He's going to work it out. And hopefully he'll get 4 or 5 at-bats every day until that comes around.
Buck, if you're John Gibbons and you're in a close game in the eighth inning, who do you give the ball to if you got to go to your pen?
Well, I think what you're going to have to do now, Steven, is find out whether or not Drew Storen can be that guy. He's been in the National League. You know, he has had intermittent opportunities. I think you just have to find out what he is. He's made a few adjustments. He's using the windup now. He's trying to generate a little more velocity, but he's gotten off to a slow start. But when you think about him, he's pitching to hitters he's not that familiar with. And you know what? He's made bad pitches. He'll tell you that. But I think the one thing that you have to do is find out what you have. I think with Davenport and Jesse Chavez, they're both throwing the ball well. But I think given his track record and the type of games he's pitched in the past, you have to find out if Drew Storen can be that guy. Certainly, we don't have any concerns about Osuna, only the fact that he hasn't had as many save opportunities as we would like. But I think if you find out what you have in Storen and let Floyd and Chavez pitch those meaningful seventh-inning situations and, hope that Brett Cecil bounces back. Physically, he's throwing the ball okay. He just hasn't had that 500 breaking ball as consistently as we saw last year.
Do you do? I know John has said that, you know, you got to keep giving Cecil the ball, right? That you do have to, you know, that's still your best alternative is for him to work it out because he has been so good. But, you know, at what point do you say, okay, we're going to put him in some less high leverage situations, or he's just going to fall down the pecking order a little bit here because right now he's messed up and he can't get guys out?
I think that's probably what they're thinking right now is we've got to have him experience a couple of clean innings before we put him back up in the top of those tough situations. But when you're thinking about the Blue Jays situations, there are no Dwayne Wards or Tom Enkes in AAA. You're not going to get anybody riding in on a white horse and save you from Buffalo. So you have to deal with the guys that you have. And certainly, you know, they have the arms. They just have to get out there and execute their pitches. And like I said, the only way they're going to do it is get out and pitch and get guys out. I think Ryan Tepera should probably get a few more opportunities. He's got good velocity, and he needs to be more aggressive and take advantage of that great arm. And I think the overall that, thank goodness the starters have been throwing as well as they have because this picture could be a lot worse than it is right now. But, you know, I believe that with Chavez and Floyd and Storen and Osuna that they can get things back on track a little bit and, get back to where they should be.
What do you see when you watch Brett Cecil right now, Buck?
It's interesting because he pitched so well last year, and he looked automatic. I think everybody kind of expected, he's going to pitch, and it's going to be automatic, and we'll be out of this situation. But it's a hard role. Everybody is gunning for you. I think that's what it is with everybody now. And Blue Jays won a division. Everybody's gunning for him right now, so all the hitters are studying the late-inning pitchers, and they're not chasing that curveball. But he's going to have to get back to using his fastball for strikes to get them to honor the fastball, and then that curveball will become more effective. But, you know, he basically is a two-pitch pitcher. He cuts the fastball from time to time, but he's got to throw enough strikes to create swing thoughts in the hitter's minds, and then they'll start chasing that curveball again.
Like another good outing for Marcus Stroman yesterday. Really impressed with how he went at Evan Longoria. Now I know Longoria hit a home run, hit a solo home run, but this is a guy who's had a little bit of success against Storen. He struck him, or against Stroman, sorry. He struck him out the first two times you saw him. The first inning on a really nice curve, and then the third inning on just a well-placed 92-mile-an-hour fastball. He's had impressive games, but for some reason yesterday, Buck, I almost got the sense that he took it up a little bit, that he picked it up a notch.
Jeff, I think that's very perceptive because, to me, Marcus Stroman has that ability to understand the significance of his starts. He wins that game, they win the series. And obviously they had a disappointing loss on Saturday, and then he comes back and really got off to a great start. And I like the fact that he had low-pitch innings, mm-hmm. in a five-pitch second inning. He threw 24 pitches in the fourth, but it struck out the side. And then he goes back to 15, 13, 12, 10, and 10. I mean, that's how you pitch. Put it in play, trust your stuff. And he did all that while striking out 9. So, you know, this kid can really pitch. He understands. He reads bats well. He looks at what hitters are trying to do, and he has enough weapons to counteract them. I thought his use of that cutter inside was terrific, especially to Brandon Dyer a couple times where he set him up for that inside pitch. And then in the seventh inning, he threw that cutter inside and got called strike three. But for a young guy that I think that was his 30th career start, that he can make adjustments in-game is pretty impressive.
Now, he's a – I was thinking about this watching him. You know, for a guy who's had you know, he's had some inherited runners score that's, you know, with the bullpen had been better, wouldn't have scored, and his ERA would be much prettier in his win-loss record, even though it's, you know, it's fine. It would statistically, he's suffered because of the bullpen, and he's had some kind of disappointments. I wonder, for, you know, for a young guy to kind of put that out of your head, you know, after you know, you come out after your rest and start again, and not try and be perfect. You know, not saying, I can't afford to hand this ball to anybody today. I got to be perfect. You know, there seems to be a level of maturity in this kid where he did, you know, he can wipe the slate clean after stuff that's disappointing, stuff that's out of his hands, and then come out and perform the way he did yesterday.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I hear it all the time from opposing teams. And they see Marcus without knowing who he is or what kind of person he is, and they have this particular impression of him. The hot dog with all of the antics and all of that. And, you know, I explained to him he's not about that. I said, that's just emotions, and he's doing a lot of those gyrations to remind himself of his poise, his composure, his posture, his breathing, all of those little checkpoints for him before he throws the next pitch. But you're right. It's easy to say, you know, man, my ERA would be great if the bullpen hadn't given up seven runs of mine. But he never thinks that way. He always thinks about the job at hand, what his job is, putting his team in a position to win. And, you know, it sounds very cliche, but it's not. It's genuine. He knows he has a responsibility to pitch late in the game. He goes to the mound every day thinking about pitching nine innings. And when it's time to give up the ball, he'll do that. And I think he's got tremendous confidence in everybody on this team.
And you know what, Buck? I kind of thought yesterday, again, just watching on TV, I wasn't at the ballpark, but watching it on TV yesterday, I thought he was a little less animated than he'd been in the past.
That's pretty interesting and pretty observant, because I agree with you 100%, and I have an idea why it happened, and I'm pretty pleased of why it happened, and I'll just keep it at that. But, you know, he's got some very good teammates, and Marcus is a very smart young man. He went out there and did his job yesterday, and he looked like a seasoned vet.
Yes, he did. Buck, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks, man. We'll see you at the park.
Good to be with you guys. You have a great day.
Take care. Buck Martinez, a Blue Jays play-by-play voice in Sportsnet. I noticed that last night. There were a couple of instances. He was not talking to himself that much going off the mound. No, we know Pete Walker told Kevin Barker and myself in Baseball Central that he was going to sit down with Marcus. And, you know, Marcus wears his emotions on his sleeve. And you know, we think back to the way he was in the dugout, his reaction when that bullpen meltdown happened. And I honestly don't. I don't think that was aimed at Brett Cecil. I think that was just...
It was aimed at himself. He
was aimed at himself. It was frustration.
Yeah, he had the line drive go off his hand. That's cost him a double play. Then he walks a guy in four pitches. He's in control of the game otherwise. He's kicking himself. He's not kicking the other
guys.
But
the point is, if you're going to do that, you go and do it in the tunnel. And I think he learned that. And
it's interesting what Buck just said there, though. I'm not putting words in Buck's mouth. But what Buck just said there was that somebody talked to him.
Well, Pete Walker did talk to him.
And maybe some teammates talked to him. Remember he had Mark Burley there last year as his kind of mentor.
Well, that
right?
whole incident in Baltimore where he basically went out and threw at somebody because he thought Mark Burley told him. Mark said, no, that's
not what I was saying.
That's not what I said, Junior. That's not what I meant.
But it'd be interesting to know who that would be on this team, you know? Yeah. Like, you kind of know in terms of the position players, and maybe that's who it is. Maybe that's still who it is, right? Maybe it's those guys. But, you know, who would be the guy that pulls you aside and says, hey, take it down a notch?
Well, you know, we do know that in the off season, I mean, we saw this on social media an awful lot. Stroman, Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Batista, they all spent a lot of time together in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if maybe message wasn't delivered.
Yeah.
You know, maybe your pitching coach tells you, but you also have it delivered by a teammate. But he was different. He was definitely different yesterday. He still did, you know, still the padding and, you know, talking about all his checkpoints about breathing and all that. But he came off the mound a couple of times. And, I mean, I made a note of it. Pardon me. He came off after giving up the home run to Longoria, which was the sixth inning. And, you know, he got Dickerson to ground out to first, got Steven Souza Jr. to ground out to short, and he just walked off the mound. I was kind of, okay, we're going to see the glove to the mouth and the – didn't see any of that. So, you know, perhaps that perhaps that's an indication of somebody who's – I wouldn't say grown up a bit, but somebody who maybe is kind of aware now of,
yeah,
of just how important – aware of how important he is to everybody. He's important to everybody in that team.
Yep.
He's important to the fans. He's important to the manager. He's important to everybody in that.
You know, it was a mature, in terms of the pitching, it was a mature pitching performance, right? Efficient. He had everything working. He was spinning the ball great yesterday, too. But, you know, we've seen, again, with taking the unpredictable Ari Dickey aside, we've seen some very mature pitching performances from Jay Happ and from Marco Estrada. And even for, you know, for a guy, you know, Aaron Sanchez still going out there and just blowing people away with his stuff. But those, you know, I think the way Happ is pitching now, you know, again, very efficient, very kind of contained. Estrada is that guy all the time. You know, there's a tone to this staff right now, which is, there's some fireworks and there's some unbelievable stuff.
But
there's some guys who know how to pitch on this team right now.
And you know what else there is? Other than Dickey, there isn't a starter out there, at least that I've seen this year, where I've seen the guy in a situation and gone, okay, here's where it's going to get dicey. I haven't been seeing that at all this year from any starting pitcher. Mr. Brunt, thank you for doing this.
See
you'll
tomorrow.
Be back Wednesday. You're tomorrow, right?
Here tomorrow.
All right. Mr. Brunt will be here tomorrow. Time for Baseball Central. Kevin Barker joins me.